Hello, everybody, and welcome to That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. I am Bill Yankovy, and this week is dedicated to television. Well, wrestling on television, that is, as this week I will be giving my thoughts on three very different and very unique events, I guess we could call it, that aired this week. This past Sunday night was the latest episode of A&E Biography, which was on Macho Man Randy Savage. I will give my thoughts on that. Also going to talk about AEW's Blood and Guts and talk about the match itself along with the show, because there was more to the show than just the Blood and Guts match. And I will talk about the season premiere of Dark Side of the Ring, which was focused on Brian Pillman, a big two-hour episode to start off the third season of Dark Side of the Ring. But, of course, before I get into the feature, there is some news to discuss. And let's start with, well, maybe the biggest news of the week, and it happened today. New Japan Pro Wrestling has postponed its two Wrestle Grand Slam shows, which were to take place on May 15th in Yokohama Stadium and May 29th in the Tokyo Dome, in a response to the extended state of emergency in Japan. Rescheduled dates for the shows are currently being determined. Now, as of late, really within this last week, New Japan has had, I want to say, two positive cases of COVID, but they did not say who, you know, the two individuals were, which I'm absolutely fine with. If you don't want to share it, I'm fine with it. That's totally understandable. But the May 29th show in the Tokyo Dome, that was going to be a big show, because that was going to be the Will Ospreay-Okada rematch from Wrestle Kingdom from earlier this year, which was just a phenomenal match. I mean, if you have not seen that match, that's a match of the year candidate. And I know we're almost at the halfway point. We got a little ways to go, but I would have it up there in discussion for the match of the year, or at least as a candidate for that. So, the two shows, the 15th in Yokohama and the 29th in the Tokyo Dome, have been, as of now, postponed. And you know, the 29th, that one, I think for American fans, and this is just a guess, I think that one's going to hurt a little bit more than the one in Yokohama, because it was right there, you know, just set up perfectly for Memorial Day weekend, because Saturday, the 29th, you had the Tokyo Dome show, and then the 30th, you have Double or Nothing, which I'll talk about a little later on, and you just had two wonderful shows set up back-to-back. And unfortunately now, one of them will not happen, but at least we know it's, you know, they're trying to keep the cases in Japan down, which I totally understand, and I hope a lot of people understand and will accept it as well. Go to Impact Wrestling, and they have re-signed Jordynne Grace to a new multi-year deal. Grace, on an interview, Grace, in an interview on the Pro Wrestling Illustrated podcast, announced during that interview that she has signed a new multi-year deal with Impact Wrestling, and I think it is absolutely wonderful that she is going to stay in Impact Wrestling, because she, to me, is one of the faces of the Knockouts division. She's already accomplished a lot of achievements in the time that she's been there. She's been Knockouts champion. She is currently one half of the Knockouts tag team champions with Rachel Ellering. there's a lot to like about her. She's in her mid-20s, so she's got youth on her side. And, you know, she's just fun to watch. I love watching Jordynne Grace in the ring. I think she's a great wrestler. You know, hopefully she'll get another opportunity in the near future to perhaps be, once again, the Knockouts champion. But we'll just have to wait and see. This past Wednesday on MLW Fusion, it was their quote-unquote season finale. And this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler if you have not seen this yet. So, if you haven't seen it, go a little, you know, fast forward a little bit, and you'll probably catch up to something on here in just a moment or two. But for those that decided to stay, at the end of this week's show, we saw the return of El Jefe himself, Dario Cueto, from Lucha Underground, and this is such a big thing. You know, especially for the diehard Lucha Underground fans who, you know, watched the shows, attended the shows for, I think it was like 4 seasons. And, you know, he, at one point, won the Observer Newsletter Award for the best non-wrestler, you know, non-wrestler personality, which shows you how good of an actor he is. So, the backstory is Selena De La Renta had financial trouble, and Azteca, I forgot what it was, I think it was like Azteca Underground, you know, was helping her out, and she got kidnapped, and El Jefe was upset, and Selena De La Renta is now gone because she was, quote-unquote, sacrificed. But I will say this, because Selena De La Renta is no longer going to be a Major League Wrestling, which is a little bit of a disappointment for me, because I really enjoyed Selena De La Renta. She is a very good heel manager, which you don't, number one, see a lot of, and number two, you don't hear that sentence a lot today in professional wrestling. Oh, this person's a good heel manager. She was, and maybe still is, depending on what she chooses to do in the future, is a good heel manager. Where she goes at this point is anyone's guess. Maybe she stays in professional wrestling. I would like for her to stay in professional wrestling. I think she's got everything you would want in a character. She's attractive looking, she's young, she makes people mad, makes people angry. So I would like to see her stay in professional wrestling, but if she chooses to go another route, if she decides, hey, maybe I want to do acting, or maybe I want to be a model, then I would support her, because she's very, very good, she's very, very talented, and she's got a very bright future, no matter where she goes, either it be in or out of professional wrestling. So it'll be very interesting to see where she will end up in a very near future. All right. You know, I think I'm just going to get right into talking about the stuff that was on TV this week, because, like I said, there were three different types of shows that we had. We had the WWE A&E biography propaganda, which I guess some people could call. We had AEW Blood and Guts, and we had Dark Side of the Ring, which premiered on Thursday night. And I want to start with the Randy Savage documentary, because this was the third one that A&E had put out of the 8. So we're almost at the halfway point. This Sunday is going to be the halfway point. So, if you haven't watched any of these yet, the Steve Austin Roddy Piper biography is fantastic. The Randy Savage biography is a disappointment. And that is sad to say, because Randy Savage should have gotten a much better documentary, or at least a better biography from A&E than, you know, some of the others did. First problem that I had, and this is a big one if you haven't seen it yet, why the hell is Bubba the Love Sponge on here? I thought, you know, if I can use a Gorilla Monsoonism, Bubba the Love Sponge is the greatest walking advertisement for birth control you might ever see. What in the hell is this guy doing on a biography of Randy Savage? I mean, clearly, there's only two reasons why he's on this, in my opinion. Number one, he was friends with Hulk Hogan. The key word being was. I don't know if they're friends now or not. Honestly, I don't care. The other issue with Bubba the Love Sponge is really the only point of him being on this is to discuss the time that he and Hogan made fun of him on the radio and did parody songs, and it's like, really? Is that really that big of a part in the life of Randy Savage? Because, you know, yeah, it happened in Tampa, and I'm sure at that time, almost 20 years ago, it was a big deal. But if you're someone like me who was a teenager, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic, it doesn't mean squat. It really doesn't. So that was the first one. Another issue that I had with this was the comedian, well, quote-unquote comedian that was on there. It's like, oh, he's a WWE fan slash actor. So it's like, okay, so is he representing the fans on this one? Because I didn't feel represented by this idiot. Peter Rosenberg. I do want to say this before I bash the comedian. Peter Rosenberg was one of the stars of this episode. He was so good, and he didn't annoy me. I really enjoyed listening to him. You know, he came off to me as someone who knew who Randy Savage was, what his career was. He knew who Randy Savage was. And he took it very seriously. Whereas with this D-bag comedian who's like, oh, you know, the way Macho Man died, that was such a macho way to die. I bet he was thinking, ooh, yeah, this macho way to die, you know. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that. No, you shouldn't say that, you dipshit. Why would you ever say that? For God's sakes, did I need to hear that? That guy needed to go. That guy just needed to go. And then, you know, they talk about the whole thing with Gorgeous George. And I'll be honest, I was pleasantly surprised that they had Gorgeous George on here. That they did a part about Gorgeous George. Because even for that short period of time, it was, you know, Randy and Gorgeous George. So that part I didn't mind. That part of the story I didn't mind. But it just seemed like, with the Randy Savage story, it just went all over the place. It didn't have a consistency from beginning to end. And that was a big problem that I had. I mean, like, the beginning of the biography I thought was good. Because, you know, they hit the points of, oh, his dad is Angelo Poffo. Brother is Lanny Poffo. Grew up in Illinois. Randy became a baseball player, got cut, then wanted to be a professional wrestler. You know, talked about the pre-WWF stuff. And the first sign that was kind of a, okay, they maybe kind of got this wrong, depending on, you know, where you heard it. And I think I heard this from Dark Side of the Ring, was how Randy Savage got the Macho name Nick, you know, Macho Man nickname. It wasn't from the Village People song. It was because, you know, when he was playing baseball, someone was like, oh, now there is a Macho Man. So that's how he got the nickname. But the thing that drove me nuts the most out of everything about this biography is when they talk, when Jerry Lawler, and I don't know if this is Jerry Lawler having a brain fart, which he's, you know, he's capable of having, we're all capable of having a brain fart. If he made an honest mistake, or if he was told to lie. And the part that I'm referring to, if you've seen it, is the part where they talk about Randy Savage going to WCW. And he's like, well, you know, we were doing TV, and Vince was looking for Randy, and I go to Vince, and I'm like, Vince, you might want to see this. And, you know, here's Randy Savage on WCW Saturday Night. And then he's like, after he saw it, Vince was just his regular self. He never, you know, he didn't do anything, never said anything. And then, like, a minute and a half later, they play the clip of Vince, you know, wishing good luck to Randy Savage. And I'm like, no, this is not how it happened. I remember how this happened. I was up, my sister, I was 9 at the time. So, one of my older sisters stayed up with me to watch Monday Night Raw that night because we didn't have school the next day. And it was I believe it was a live episode of Raw. And that's when we found out that Randy Savage had left WWF. It wasn't because of, you know, Vince seeing him on WCW. It was because of the whole, you know, Vince is like, well, we have to say goodbye to Randy Savage. He did not come to terms on a new agreement. He's been with the company for 9 years. And on behalf of all the fans, from your number one fan, Godspeed. It's like, oh my God, they blew this one. It was terrible. They did a terrible job with the Randy Savage biography. I mean, and the funny thing is, and I actually, I believe most of the fans that talked about this, I don't think this was WWE's fault. I think A&E had a big part in something to do with this. Maybe WWE had something to do with it, you know, but it's like, you know, you have these 8 biographies that you're going to do. And Randy Savage, the Randy Savage one of the 8 on paper should not be the worst biography that you do. It should not be. If you did it with person X here or person Y here, okay, I kind of forgive. But it's Randy Savage. How do you mess up a biography of Randy Savage? Doesn't make sense. Although, I will say, even though I lost 2 hours of my life that I will never get back, WWE's Most Wanted Treasures was actually kind of fun. I'm only watching it because of the stuff they go for and to see the actual items. I really don't care if they get the items or not. It's just kind of cool to see some of this stuff. Like, but before, I'll talk about the episode from this week, but like the previous week, it was like Kane and Undertaker, and at the end, they have Undertaker's mask from when his face was broken by Mabel, and it's like, holy crap, we haven't seen that in 25 years, and it's like, I was there the night he wore it the first time, and it was, that was a fun one. The Jerry Lawler one was a fun one, too, because it involved not only Jerry Lawler, but Andy Kaufman, and basically, it's, you know, if you're going to do a thing on Jerry Lawler, Andy Kaufman's got to be a part of it, and to see Bill Apter on there, who I have met a couple of times, one of the nicest guys, one of the great people in wrestling, I cannot say anything bad about Bill Apter. I can't. I will never say anything bad about Bill Apter. I think he's a tremendous guy, and he is a big factor, a big part of Kaufman going to Memphis for the, you know, with the angle and then Jerry Lawler. And, you know, Bill Apter is a living legend in the business, and, you know, he's just an amazing guy. Once this pandemic is over and, you know, we could get back to conventions and shows and stuff, if you get a chance to meet Bill Apter, folks, wonderful human being. Just a wonderful, wonderful human being. But, you know, like I said, Most Wanted Treasures, like I said, it's kind of like, you know, it's not going to be the greatest show in the world, but just to see some of the old stuff is actually kind of cool. So, no complaints there. So, after going to bed early on Raw, because, God, why did, you know, it was like, real, did I just need to see that? And I'm going to rant on Charlotte real quick. It's not the person. It's the character. I think Charlotte, the person, the athlete, is a tremendous athlete. Absolutely tremendous. But as a character, oh my God, I can't stand the character anymore. It's like when she, you know, when they did that angle a couple weeks ago, excuse me, where she beats up the referee and gets fined and suspended, and then you hear like, oh, she's going in for, you know, like dental work. It's like, okay, she's going to be out a couple of weeks. And then, because I didn't watch Raw the following week, because I was tired, and she comes back, and it's like, oh my God. And I feel bad for her. I feel bad for the woman, because it's like, you know, she's good. She's a good athlete. She's a good wrestler. But she's kind of getting the John Cena, Roman Reigns kind of treatment, where she's just being shoved down our throats. And the only difference between Cena and Reigns to Charlotte is Charlotte's character sucks. It just sucks. It's like, I can't stand her. I don't want to hear. I have gotten to the point where when she cuts a promo now, my TV is on mute, and I have to have it on closed caption, so I read what she says. I don't want to hear what she says. I read what she says. That's how bad the character is. But, so yeah, after giving up on Raw, Wednesday was Dynamite, Blood and Guts. I enjoyed the show. I thought it was a really good show. You had a very good match with Cody and QT Marshall. I know it sounds kind of weird to say, but it actually was a really good match between the two. And, it, you know, the thing with that show, it didn't feel like anything was wasted. It really didn't feel like there was one wasted moment on this show. Because you had the tag match of Moxley and Kingston against Omega and Nakazawa. Start that off. Then you had Cody and Marshall, which, like I said, was a really good match. I enjoyed the match. Then you had the angle with Scorpio Sky, Ethan Page, and Darby Allin. Okay, this is good. This is, you know, this is continuing a story from the previous week, and it makes sense. And then you have Britt Baker and a jobber match, but it's good because you know she's going to win the match. And then you have the four-team match for the number one contendership. It's like, you know who's going to win, but it's still going to be good. So then they start talking about Double or Nothing, because it's 3.5 weeks away at this point. And the first match they announce is Hikaru Shida defending the AEW Women's title against Britt Baker. I think we all know how this is going to go, but I'll save that prediction for 3 weeks. And then Tony Schiavone is supposed to have a segment with Kenny Omega to announce the main event of Double or Nothing. So Jim and I's thought from last week of the Elite against Moxley, Kingston, and three other people in Stadium Stampede is now thrown out the window. So they do the segment, and Tony announces that Kenny Omega will defend the AEW World title at Double or Nothing against the winner of an Eliminator match next week between the number one and the number two ranked contenders, which are, respectively, Orange Cassidy and Pac. Or Pac, however he calls him. I think he calls himself Pac. So Omega's like, oh, well, you know, me and Pac, we've wrestled before. He's beaten me. He's made me tap out. I've beaten him. It's going to be a great match. We're going to fight again, and I'm going to beat him. And then when Orange Cassidy gets mentioned, it's like, Orange? You know, Kenny Omega's like, Orange Cassidy's in this? You know, and then Orange comes out, and it's just a really good heel promo by Kenny Omega. Because, like, at first I'm thinking, okay, I could do Omega and Pac again. I could do that match. But Omega and Orange Cassidy, there's a different element in that match, if that is the match they go with. And it maybe seems like it's going to go that way. I am more than fine with either one of those two facing Omega and making it the main event of Double or Nothing. I am more than fine with that. And then, the final segment before Blood and Guts, Miro comes out, and he talks about how, you know, it's his destiny to win a title, and he has a contract, and that next week on Dynamite, he's going to challenge Darby Allin for the TNT Championship. And, you know, after what happened with Allin earlier in the show, it's like, I don't know if he's going to make that match. And then there's a part in the contract that's like, if Allin cannot make the match, he forfeits the title to Miro. And Miro's like, no, no, I want no forfeit. He's going to wrestle me next week and I'm going to break him. It'll be game over, you know. And then they do the card. They show the card for next week's Dynamite. Holy crap, is that a stacked show. Three championship matches. You have Moxley and Yuji Nagata for the IWGP United States title. You have Darby Allin and Miro for the TNT title. You have Young Bucks and SCU for the AEW tag team titles. And if the Young Bucks win, SCU has to split up. Then you also add in, you know, Orange Cassidy and Pac for the number, you know, for the right to face Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing. And it's just like, holy crap, either any of those four on a normal week would be the main event match of Dynamite. You have four main event matches for next week on Dynamite. I can't remember, honestly, I can't remember a show like that where you have four legit main events. It's unbelievable. It is unbelievable. But speaking of unbelievable, let's get to Blood and Guts. This was a fantastic match to watch. This was fantastic. Sammy Guevara and Dax Harwood start the match. Harwood gets busted open early in the match. Shawn Spears comes in next, gives Guevara this chair shot. Oh my God, there were a couple of chair shots like that during the match. Ortiz comes in next, and then Cash Wheeler comes in next, and Santana comes in, and Wheeler is bleeding all over the place. Oh my God, he looked like, pardon the expression, it's like bleeding like a pig. It was gruesome. And then Wardlow comes in, and then there's a really good point in the match where Santana, Ortiz, and Guevara are like, okay, we gotta take Wardlow out. You know, we can leave the other three there, but, you know, we gotta take out Wardlow the best that we can. And then after the two-minute period ended, Hager comes in, and, you know, it's Wardlow and Hager, and that's really good. And then MJF gets in, and then Jericho gets in. And then, you know, you get into the submission or surrender part of Blood and Guts, and they're just doing everything they can. They're tearing the ring apart. There are guys bleeding all over the place. MJF was a mess in the match, you know. And then the ending. Excuse me. I actually liked the ending to the match because, you know, MJF is like, I'm going to throw this sucker off the cage if you guys don't give up. And, you know, it's like in the promo that Jericho cut last week, it's like the inner circle is a family. You know, we're with each other. And Guevara is the one that is like, I surrender. He doesn't want to see Jericho get hurt. So the Pinnacle win the match after they get their butts whooped for about a half hour. I did not mind the ending to it. And then the post-match, Jericho gets thrown off the top of the cage. Now, I want to talk about the two controversies to this match. The one that I had the most problem with this match, and the one that most fans had a problem with this match. The problem I had with this match the most, and I thought for sure Tony Khan was going to find a way to get this done right, was the commercials. I thought Tony Khan, we even said it last week, by the commercial times, have the whole match shown in its entirety. Yes, we got two or three picture-in-picture commercials. But on the last one, at least for me, and I'm not really sure about other people, I lost my picture-in-picture. It went away. Like, I did not see anything for 2 minutes but commercials. If they hadn't done the picture-in-picture thing, I don't know, maybe we have a better reaction to this match. Maybe. But that's what kind of ruined it for me. I mean, you are a wrestling promotion. I know you're 2 years old, but you have such a financial backing that you couldn't buy commercial time and be like, look, We'll give you TNT all this money. You know, we'll buy the commercial time if you let us show this match in its entirety. Just let us do the match in its entirety. Show the match. We'll pay you. I don't know why Tony didn't think of that. I'm not really sure. Maybe he tried, but couldn't. I don't know. Now, the problem that most fans had, from what I've read, was the post-match where Jericho got thrown off the top of the cage and he landed on a landing pad. Really? That's your biggest problem with this match? the fact that a wrestler got thrown 15, 18 feet through, you know, right onto a landing pad, that's your problem? I mean, what did you want them to do? Did you want MJF to throw Jericho into the sixth level of hell? Is that what you wanted? Or did you want MJF to throw Chris Jericho into a pool of double-edged razor blades and spend one more minute with you? I don't get it. It's 2021. We have to protect the wrestlers. The last thing that any of us as fans should be complaining about is, oh, Jericho got thrown onto a landing pad. Well, where did you want him to land? Did you want him to break his friggin' back? I don't get it. Do not get it. But overall, I really enjoyed the match. I really did. I loved this match. I thought it was very good, very well done. You know, violence for the sake of violence, blood for the sake of blood. If I had to do my ratings for this match, I would give it an A. It's not an A+, but it's an A. It worked very well. Everybody put everything into that match, and it worked wonderfully. It worked wonderfully. Now, I asked on our Facebook and Twitter accounts, what did our fans think of the match? And we did get a reply from Michael Hawkins, who wrote in, loved it, just wish they would have stopped doing the picture-in-picture thing. But all in all, that match was great. Michael, you are a very, very smart man. You and I have the same thing that we didn't like about this match, was the picture-in-picture. So, thank you. And I totally agree with you. I did not like the picture-in-picture. Everything else was great. But, you know, you can't please everybody, so, excuse me. It is what it is. And, you know, it was, I think, a success. And eventually, I do see this happening again in the very near future. So, I would be ready for more blood and guts. I think if they do it again, it would have to be, the next one would have to be a pay-per-view. I think that's the only way it can be, is a pay-per-view. But we'll see. Now, there was news after the event ended. A couple of interesting notes. One of which was that the four other matches that aired before the show, or before the Blood and Guts match, was pre-taped. And the crowd reaction was live. The matches were just taped. So, Tony Khan, before the show went on the air, came out and said, you know, this is what we're doing. And if no one is happy, you have, I think it was like 45 minutes or something, and we'll give you a full refund. The last I heard, only 5 people asked for a refund. Only 5. So, you know, that's not bad. And then you get the news that AEW ends up being the number one program on cable that night with over 1 million viewers. Tremendous job. That's a big deal for AEW. I think this is the first time since Dynamite started that they finished number one in the ratings on cable TV. So they got to feel really good about themselves. And next week's show, oh my God, you know, like I said, you've got 4 main events on that show. Any one of those four could be the main event of Dynamite. That's how big of a card it is. And then last night, Thursday night, was the season premiere of Dark Side of the Ring and the story of Brian Pillman. And I learned a lot of stuff in the 2 hours that it aired, or that aired with this episode. And it was such a sad story. It really is. I do want to tell this story because I don't think about Brian Pillman, or at least I don't think about the death of Brian Pillman as much as, you know, other deaths like Owen and Eddie and Benoit and Savage and Warrior, you know, and I could go on. But it was so weird because, like, I have this memory. The day of Bad Blood, I was doing basketball practice. You know, I was doing basketball training and getting ready to, you know, play basketball for the first time, first year. So I didn't get the show that night. Did not get the show. Because, you know, back in 1997, you could not get every pay-per-view unless you had the income to do it. So then I go the next day, go to school, you know, normal day. I do not have internet. My family does not have internet at this time. You know, honestly, we don't get the internet until like the summer of 98. So I remember that Nitro, you know, Nitro starts an hour early, so it goes to 8 p.m. 8 p.m. is when it starts. So I'm like, okay, here we go. Nitro's going to start. And then the beginning, it shows in memory of Brian Pillman. And I'm like, what? He died? You know, and I had no idea. I had no idea this had happened. And then, you know, at 9 o'clock, Raw comes on, and then, and this is the first time that I can think of right away where the wrestler, you know, everyone's standing on the stage, and Vince is in the ring, and, you know, they do the 10-bell salute, and, you know, it was kind of shocking that here is a guy who was on TV every week, and now he's gone. It was kind of shocking. As far as the episode goes, man, there were times that I felt terrible for Brian Pillman. I think the one that got to me the most was the story about him and his girlfriend Rochelle. And I'm watching this, because like the first half hour is commercial free. I'm watching it, and the way they're talking, and the way his sister is talking. And I'll get to his sister in a moment. It's like Brian Pillman found the love of his life in this woman, in Rochelle. You know, and they had a daughter together, Brittany, and then when Brian found out that he had another daughter, they accepted her, Danny, in, you know, Rochelle had no problems. And then Brian cheated on Rochelle with Melanie, who, oh man, you could tell, you know, she was doing drugs. Like, you could tell, you know, she was on drugs in the past, not today. I don't think she's on drugs today. But man, it's like the things that they did and said, and when you know, you hear that Rochelle killed herself, and it's Brian's sister who is the one that goes to the hospital to, you know, find out she's dead. And Brian is just a mess, and it's like he felt responsible. And I think even Melanie said that she felt, you know, a part of a responsibility of, Rochelle's suicide. You know, that's Brittany's mother. And Brian paid for the entire funeral. And at the end, you know, when they were closing the casket and Brian breaks down and cries, and I'm just thinking to myself, you know, this woman was the love of Brian's life. Not Melanie, with all due respect, but Rochelle, that was the love of his life right there. And then, you know, Brian Jr. is born, and you get into the whole loose cannon gimmick, and his training coach from the NFL was involved, and he was kind of an interesting character. And, you know, it's so good to watch. And then another part that really got me was after the death and how Melanie, for a better way of saying this, went in a downward spiral. Married another guy. The guy is a total piece of shit. Did not answer the calls from the people that were doing this episode, because the way that Brian Jr. talks about him, he sounds like the biggest pile of shit, and I wanted to kick his ass. And it's like, these kids have this miserable life, and for some reason, part of me was thinking about my dad's mom. When he told us, you know, me, my brother, my sisters, about how my Nana kind of had a Cinderella kind of life. You know, the dad was married to this lovely woman, and, you know, her mom passed away, and then he marries another woman, and the woman's an evil witch, and, you know, she's treated like crap. It's kind of that equivalent. You know, if you're going to compare it to anything, it's a Cinderella situation, but with three kids. But thank God for Linda Pillman, who seems like the nicest person in the world, loves her nieces and nephew, loves the kids. And in a way, if you think about it, she saved their lives. Because, you know, their mom and stepdad, or stepmom and stepdad, however you want to put it, were treating them so badly. And it got to the point where, for a long time, the three of them, I think there's like five kids in the family. They said five, but we only saw three. It's like, the three of them never wanted to speak to Melanie ever again. Ever again. And I honestly would not blame them. I really would not blame them. But Brian Jr. was a bigger person, and is like, you know, I worked things out with my mom. You know, we're back on good terms. We're trying everything. And I think that's something that we kind of need in this life, in this world, is, you know, a little bit of forgiveness. And then they talk about how, you know, Brian's journey is incredible because, you know, he wasn't really a physical athlete. He played video games all the time. But in a way, at the end, I kind of felt like Brian Jr. has an angel watching over him, and his angel is his dad. That's his angel. That's his guardian angel, is his dad. And man, I'll tell you what, Brian Pillman, I watched him when I was a kid. Him and Jushin Thunder Liger, God, man, that was so good. And I thought, you know, when they teamed up for the NWA Tag Title Tournament in 92, I thought, this is going to be a hell of a tag team. You know, you have Pillman and Liger together as a team, that's going to be an unbelievable tag team. And I know I talk about this match a lot, but it's the honest truth. the match they have against Beef Wellington and Chris Benoit at Clash of the Champions 19 is must-see television. It is one of the most underrated matches I've ever seen. It is fantastic. You need to go out of your way to see that match if you've never seen it or if you haven't seen it in a long time. It is that good of a match. And then, man, you know, just watching back, I was like, yeah, I really appreciate what Brian Pillman did a lot more now as an adult than I do as a kid. And Pillman is one of those people that in my mind, I wish WWE would just put him in the Hall of Fame. He was such an influence. He, you know, in kind of a way, changed the landscape of the business for many, many years. And is probably one of the defining people of, you know, if you talk about who's an overachieving wrestler, Brian Pillman is one of the, you know, mountain pieces of overachieving wrestlers. He's so, you know, he's 5'10", 5'11", maybe 220 pounds, has a raspy voice after having 40 throat surgeries as a kid, and, you know, almost 25 years after his death, is still talked about to this day. That's how good of a wrestler and how much of an influence Brian Pillman had in professional wrestling. Even in death, he has. And I don't say this very often where I'm like, I secretly, you know, there's like a few people in this business, you know, in pro wrestling, I secretly root for. Brian Pillman Jr. is one of those people I secretly root for because I think he can be something. He can be a big star, and it's almost like this is what his dad should have been had he lived. And I just root for the kid. I really do. I want him to succeed, and I think he will succeed. But if I had to rank the three that I watched this week, Blood and Guts would be at the top, then Dark Side of the Ring, and then that god-awful biography of Randy Savage. That is such a disappointment. Well, that's going to do it for this week, but before I go, let's get into the plugs. If you have any questions or comments, send an email, wrestlingman@thatwrestlingshow.com. Follow the show on Twitter @WrestlingShow11. Follow us on Instagram @ThatWrestlingShow. Join our Facebook group, That Wrestling Show Fan Group. You type that in the search bar and you are right there. And if you can't find it, it's okay. I put the link in the description of each and every episode. And if you like what you heard here, visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/ThatWrestlingShow. We have three tiers. The highest tier is $3. That's the biggest pledge, $3, and you get a lot of great content, a lot of extra content that you wouldn't hear on the regular show. Now let's plug some friends and other shows that I like. Check out Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast with Joe Morata and Michael Quinn. This week on the show, they have a couple of brand new segments. Change Your Mind, where one fan gives his or her thoughts, and Joe and Mike try to change your mind. This week, it's Hulk Hogan 1993, plus week one of the Royal Rankings of the Best World Title Changes, and a review of WWF Superstars from June 13th, 1987. That's the one where Honky Tonk Man, spoiler alert, wins the Intercontinental title from Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Now, a little birdie told me that this weekend, possibly, on their Patreon page, because again, they're the only other podcast that we will plug their Patreon for. A little birdie told me that there's a really good possibility this weekend that their review of the 1993 Royal Rumble event will be up sometime this weekend on their Patreon feed. So for $5, you can go listen to that review and all their past pay-per-view reviews on our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. Also, check out Greetings from Allentown with Peter Winston. He watches an episode of wrestling each week in his own unique, kind of quirky perspective. This week, he reviews an episode of WCW Worldwide from February 13, 1993, where a very young Rob Van Dam faces a very young Raven. That is this week on Greetings from Allentown. Also, check out Juice Pro Wrestling, where this week they discuss, among many things, Mortal Kombat, the new movie, Jay White, Ring of Honor, Retromania. I have not had a chance to get that game, but I do plan on getting that game at some point. And a lot more. That is this week on Juice Pro Wrestling. And on the 24-inch podcast, the Hulk Hogan Appreciation Podcast, I call it, join Steve Bennett and Dave Rollins, where this time around, they discuss Hulk Hogan's match with Mr. Perfect from Saturday night's main event, April of 1990. That is the 24-inch podcast, and you can find that on the Sportscasters feed, wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're looking for non-wrestling-related podcasts, check out the Best Pick Movie Podcast with Tom, John, and Jess, three movie fans who watch each and every Academy Award-winning Best Picture in no particular order. This week, they discuss the Best Picture winner of 2019, Parasite. That is this week on the Best Pick Movie Podcast. Also, check out Last Stop Penn Station with Kerry Silken and Ian Riccoboni as we look into the life of Kerry Silken. This week, they discuss roller derby, the value of knowing your history, Yogi Berra, and much more. That is this week on Last Stop Penn Station. Also, check out The Castle Vault, where two guys watch each and every Disney animated film on Disney+. This week, they discuss The Good Dinosaur, from 2015. That is this week on The Castle Vault. Also, check out Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast, where this week it is more rare Weird Al clips with John Bermuda Schwartz. That is this week on Dave and Ethan's 2000-inch Weird Al podcast. Also, check out the hit new podcast, Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts. It's a podcast where myself and Jim Boy Star go on this adventure discussing the Kingdom Hearts video game. This week, our episode is, and as soon as I get it, I'll tell you, Mermaids and Pumpkins. That is this week on Bill Learns Kingdom Hearts. And finally, Sharks Pond, a South Park podcast, where I watch, review, and discuss each and every South Park episode. This week, it is the beginning of Season 12 of South Park, as Cartman has a little tonsil trouble. That is this week's episode on Sharks Pond, a South Park podcast. Alright, next week on the show, going to preview WWE Backlash, because, well, I refuse to call it WrestleMania Backlash. I am just calling it Backlash. Also going to discuss some wrestling news and probably talk about that episode of Dynamite coming up this Wednesday night with what I think are the four main events. I'll probably talk about that as well. So on that note, everybody have a good, safe weekend. And to you moms out there, have a happy, wonderful Mother's Day. Sunday is your day. And to all you listeners, please be kind and good to your mom. You only have one mom in this world. Remember, she brought you into this world. She sure as hell can take you out of it. So until then, I am Bill Yankovy. Thank you for listening to That Wrestling Show, the podcast where all pro wrestling matters. And as always, Happy Mother's Day, everybody.